USA Radio News.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo returned home from his trip to North Korea, where he met with dictator Kim Jong-un. Secretary of State Pompeo updates us on that trip.
I want to thank Chairman Kim for the time that I got to spend with him, where we got to talk about all the range of issues that are in front of our two countries that will let us get there. And he appreciated the president having sent me, and we will, in short order, be able to talk about when the president will get a chance to meet with him at what will be the second summit.
President Trump announced at the Oval Office today that Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley will be leaving her job at the end of the year. The president thanked her for her service.
So, Nikki, I just wanted to tell you that we will miss you. We'll be speaking all the time, but we will miss you nevertheless. And you have done a fantastic job, and I want to thank you very much.
Hurricane Michael is intensifying and set to strike the panhandle of Florida as a Category 3 hurricane sometime tomorrow. You're listening to USA Radio News.
This flu season, one Walgreens flu shot can make a world of difference. So you can protect yourself and also your close-talking coworkers, high-fiving neighbors, two-month-old niece. That's why Walgreens has specially trained pharmacists that have provided over 60 million flu shots since 2010. Stop by for your flu shot today with a $0 copay with most insurance. Because protecting the world starts with protecting yours. Walgreens. Trusted since 1901. Vaccine subject to availability. State age and health-related restrictions may apply.
Indeed knows it's hard to find qualified candidates when you're hiring.
It's like finding a unicorn.
But when you post your job on Indeed, it's easy to find people with the skills you need.
Nurse practitioner, 4+ years experience, acute care certification.
Indeed has a huge pool of amazing candidates and screener tools that help you find your most qualified applicants.
Whoa, an entire shortlist of unicorns.
See why more than 3 million companies worldwide use Indeed to hire. Post your job at Indeed.com/hire. Indeed, the world's number one job site. Source.com score total visits.
Google is shutting down Google Plus. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes with more details.
The shutdown of the long-dormant consumer arm of its social network comes after Google exposed the private data of hundreds of thousands of Google Plus users and then didn't disclose the issue this past spring, in part because of fears that doing so would draw regulatory scrutiny and could cause reputational damage. That's according to people briefed on the incident. Upon discovering the bug, Google patched it, but again opted not to disclose it to the public. In announcing the closure now of Google Plus, Google acknowledged that it failed to gain significant traction with consumers. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
President Trump had lunch today with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who just returned home from North Korea. The president is currently traveling from Washington, D.C. to Omaha, Nebraska for one of his Make America Great Again rallies. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Last month, the United States and Canada agreed to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement. President Trump was never a fan of NAFTA, so much as called it a disaster. The new NAFTA will be replaced by the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Stephen Harper is a former Prime Minister of Canada. He talks about how this deal will benefit the United States.
I think from the standpoint of the United States, the gains on the auto sector, there's both content requirements and wage provisions, a number of other things that really should help over time tilt new production back to the United States. I really always felt that this was the only real grievance that I thought was legitimate about Mexico. You know, Canada and the United States, we bailed out the auto sector during the global financial crisis, and then the next thing we see, the moving production to Mexico. So I think that was a legitimate thing for the president to be concerned about, and I think this helps tilt that back.
Next, the former prime minister talks about the trade differences between us and China.
I think the problem with Chinese trade is actually more fundamental. We've ended up setting up a system post-WTO. I can criticize this because it happened before I was there. We're really... You know, the Chinese can have wide-ranging access to our markets. They can sell an awful lot here at kind of when they want and where they want and at what quantity. It is the opposite in the case of us. When we go to China, we can only sell what the Chinese say we can sell, when they say we can sell it, and in what quantity.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Joe Peters, and we're going to get started with Real Estate Matters. We've got Bonnie Duncan on today from United Way, and I'll be back with you in about 1 minute. Thank you.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Got it. Hey, this is Joe Peters, and we're going to get started with Real Estate Matters. I've got Bonnie Duncan sitting with me. Hey, Bonnie. So,
hey, Joe.
Good to have everybody here. They've asked me to do a little bit of Weber first, so give me about 10 seconds to do that. We pay a little bit of an introduction, and then we do the Weber forecast.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So the Weber forecast is pretty interesting. It's hot and humid, on the edge of hot and humid. It's 78 and a little humid. We're used to 98 and a lot of humid. But it's going to get a little worse through Thursday, where I think we're going to catch the tail end of this rainstorm that is now a hurricane. It's named after my son, Michael, and he was a hurricane, so I think it's very adaptly named. And then it's going to get cool. It's going to blow through, and it's going to be the high of 58 over the weekend. So I think weather changes really nicely as we go forward.
Let me just click the streaming so that we're recording.
Great. So with that in mind, I've got my guest, Bonnie Duncan. And Bonnie and I have known each other from a couple of years ago when I was doing Leadership Hunterdon, and I first got to meet you, and you were over on Walter Foren. Are you still there, or did you move?
We have two buildings now.
Okay.
We still have some folks over at Walter Foren and a volunteer center on Fulbright Road.
Okay. And Fulper is just for the volunteers, but your administrative offices are in Walter Foren, because that was a pretty
Correct.
Nice building, as I remember. There was a lot of community buildings in there.
Mm-hmm.
The outreach, I'm trying to think what it was called, what a tall, thin girl worked that was there, because I remember going
Prevention Resources.
Prevention Resources. I went to them. I said, you got the best conference room in Flemington. We should have
right.
meetings here.
Right. So, and we have an equally large room in there, so
okay.
we sometimes have overflow there as well.
Great. So what, I read up a little about your background, because I always like to go backwards and come forward. Looks like you started up in, looks like you went to high school in Panama. I found that fascinating. And then your college was in Ontario, and then you wound up here in the States. Tell us a little about that.
So, of course, a lot of folks know that New Jersey has had a tradition of having pharma.
Right.
So my father was with Schering Plough.
Okay.
He was bilingual and consequently was part of the international division. So I moved around quite a bit. I left the States when I was 2 and didn't come back permanently till I was in college. I was in my 3rd year of college when my folks moved back to the States.
Wow. And you went to college in Canada?
I did. Both of my parents had gone to college there. My mother actually was born in Canada.
Okay.
So that was where part of my family had roots. So my father is a naturalized citizen in the States. So
right.
they all went to college at
Queen's University in Ontario, and I sort of follow the family tradition there.
Wow. Where in Ontario is that? Is it
Kingston?
In...
It's about halfway between Toronto and Montreal.
Okay. I've driven that. We did a whole Canada route about two summers ago. Went mm-hmm. from Montreal up to Quebec, as they call it.
Quebec.
And then we came back over to Ottawa, was it? And then Toronto, mm-hmm. or is it Toronto then Ottawa? I think it was Ottawa then Toronto.
Correct.
Ottawa to be fascinating.
Correct.
And Toronto was fascinating.
Uh-huh.
The ethnic, we did a food tour of Toronto, which mm-hmm. was amazing.
Right.
And then we came down through, did the falls. You got to, obligatory, you got to go to Niagara Falls, and then down to, mm-hmm. to Pittsburgh to find out where they invented wings, and then back home. It was a great trip, though. I got to love the Canadian people. I think the best description I've ever heard, this is not mine, so don't throw things at me, is that the Canadians right along the border are a little bit hard to deal with, but once you get into Canada, it's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we found the people beautiful. As a fact, Quebec, or Quebec, they call it,
right.
is pretty much French. I mean, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of English spoken, and people would come and ask us if we needed help and call mm-hmm. us a cab, and we felt very welcomed in
yes.
all of those areas.
It's a very friendly
right.
Country. I live both in Toronto and in Kingston.
Kingston.
So good places to be, you know, and not that far from here. You know,
no,
it's
that's
a drive
for sure.
away.
And they say about 70% of all Canadians live within 25 miles of the border, because a lot of them come to or feed off of the United States mm-hmm. for work. I know I was in retail, so right after 9/11, we couldn't get any business done in this country. We were flying up to Montreal, which is the Canadians' New York City, for retail. It's an island, really. And I did business with something called Rona up there, which is like our Home Depot. It was just off the island in Boucherville.
Mm-hmm.
And got to love the people, although they'd go in sidebars on me. I'd have to bring somebody in that spoke the Quebec or French so that they knew we were listening to them, just to keep them honest. But we had a lot of fun. Did
uh-huh.
a lot of business up there. So how long have you been with United Way?
So I have now been with United Way 21 years.
Wow.
Actually, if you included my volunteer time, it's more than that.
Okay.
I was in corporate. I've been fortunate to live and work in Hunterdon County all the time that I've been here.
Right.
So that's been a good thing for me. So I was in corporate before I joined United Way, and did some volunteering for United Way before I joined the staff.
Super. I'm going to take those earphones off so I can get you on
camera
a little bit.
There you go.
You just hung right in front of your face.
That would be the being slightly vertically challenged.
She's a nice person with your earphones in front of her. So 21 years is a long time. And all in Hunterdon County, you said?
Yes. I mean, for that. So I've been okay. in Hunterdon over 40 years.
Right.
So I've been here a while.
Wow. And what kind of work does your husband do?
My husband's retired now.
Okay, good for him. I'm jealous.
He's an IT type of dude.
All right.
Did a lot of work with J&J and Dun & Bradstreet and
okay.
whatnot. So he worked out of county, and I worked in county.
Interesting.
He was the traveler.
Interesting. Now, I did IT more in retail than that was manufacturing, or in user manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
finished goods, they call it. And we probably did similar things, because I know I work for SAP, and I know J&J is a big SAP customer, because I used to talk to clients that were coming out of there. Oh, yeah, we work on SAP. So
mm-hmm.
got too many of those gray hairs after a while. I went into the real estate. I love it. I've been doing it for 15 years full time mm-hmm. now, and it's not so bad. I don't have to get on a plane every Monday morning.
Oh, there you go. Well, I like the ability to be able to give back and
right.
to find meaningful work.
Yep.
And, you know, corporate did what I needed to do. I was a single mom for a lot of years.
Okay.
And so it helped get the job done. But when I had more choice, it was nice to be able to do something that was more meaningful to me in terms of filling my cup with
right.
goodness.
I got right after I finished Leadership Hunterdon. We were in the same building. I got to know the woman who runs the Hunterdon Helpline, and she
mm-hmm.
asked me to join the board. I spent 2 years with her and got to understand Hunterdon a little bit better and the Helpline a little bit, and then
uh-huh.
I just got too busy to keep going at it. But it's amazing what goes on in Hunterdon County. And Somerset. I'm just finishing Leadership Somerset, and I understand you used to run Leadership Hunterdon.
So when I was, I was a former board member for the chamber.
Okay.
And one of the, some of the work that I did along with Linda Friedman and some of the other folks on staff here with the chamber was to create Leadership Hunterdon. So the curriculum has changed over time, but, you know, being able to put something together that we were able to put out into the community to really try to drive the next generation of leaders for the community. We saw the need and kind of came up with a game plan for how to do that. So being able to see, I can't remember now if it's 6 or 7 years that the course has been going on, and to see the graduates that, and the caliber of the graduates that are coming out of Leadership Hunterdon, that makes me feel good.
Yeah. You should, because I know when Chris first told us about it, I go to what we call a Leeds Club that we do once a month, and he was mentioning it, and I said, I got to look into this. It was a little pricey for me because I had to pay for it myself. Most people, a company pays for it, but I got so much out of it. I literally said, I wonder if they have one in Somerset County, because half my business is over there, and it took me 2 years to get into it, but I'm just finishing. It's different. Their class is about 24 people, and it's run by the county in combination with the board of freeholders sit in at the meetings. For instance, Peter, who's now retired, is at every meeting, but it's different, but it's almost, it's not the same, and it's not totally different either. So there's a lot of overlap. Got to meet a lot of people. They go for 10 months versus 9, which we went for. We walked around some parks, which I don't remember doing here. Here, I remember walking through some dairy farms, which I don't think they have any dairy farms in Hunterdon, in Somerset. And then we actually had to go through the jail system and meet some of the judges in the courthouse, which we did that here too, I guess. But they're both good. And I almost, if I had the time, there's a state program now, which is not an inexpensive, and I think you've got to get nominated to it. But I have no, Marilyn says, you want to run for office. I said, no, no political aspirations. I just want to make a difference without being in charge. And it's almost like if you looked at Mahatma Gandhi or some of these other people that were just the person that catalyzed the change that got made. And I... when we did our paper, we did a white paper here in Somerset. We're actually rebuilding the kitchen for Agape House, and that's been an interesting. I've been in charge of fundraising for it. And
oh, there you go.
They figured put a sales guy in charge, and it's been pretty interesting because I've even got Anne from, I'm trying to remember the name of it, MSI. I said, Anne, we need a kitchen sink. And she says, first of all, we needed kitchen faucets. She says, I got them. I said, no, we got that already. We need a kitchen sink. So she's contributing a kitchen sink. And we've got different companies that contribute. We've got a woman who does kitchens for a living is getting a whole bunch of stuff donated. So we're doing this whole project for about $4,000 or $5,000. But it's going to be a new kitchen for one of the free kitchens in Agape House, which is a halfway house right in across from the courthouse on the main street of Somerville. I'm amazed by both in Hunterdon and Somerset, both being bedroom communities, people come home, go to work, come home, go to work, and don't look to the sides. I'm amazed by how much is going on in both counties, both by people I've had on, people called me, said I'd like to come on. But for instance, we have in Somerset County, and I'm sure we have a number here in Hunterdon, almost 120 homeless people. And there's a trying to remember the name of it, but there's a bus, a food bus, where they actually go out and feed the homeless in some of the cities. It's got to be Spanish speaking and whatever, and it's totally voluntary, and it's an amazing when you sit and listen to the people that are doing it telling you what's there in your county. One of the things I learned in Somerset County is that we have a stream of poverty that goes through it that is amazing. We have more than 40% below the poverty level in Bound Brook, Somerville itself, North Plainfield, Raritan, and then into Manville. That to me is amazing. That's an $11,000 earning for every year. How do people exist? And we're sitting around them. For instance, I go every Thursday to the golf club in Bridgewater, and our Rotary meeting happens. And I'm saying, here we are, most of us members of this club, and going, listening to people about poverty. So I think The eye-opening of these two experiences has been good for me, but in listening to you, the one thing I remember you saying is, I came in asking what can United Way do for the seniors, because I've always been seniors-oriented, now that I are one. And you said, no, it's just the opposite, Joe. It's what can the seniors do for United Way? And it's a unique way, but a good way. It's the right way of looking at it. It's giving back, getting involved, and taking your expertise and letting somebody else that needs your accounting background or whatever benefit from you.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of volunteers who are either retired or close to retirement. We had one gentleman that volunteered for us, I think, up until he was 92.
Wow.
So, you know, depending on the skill and the needs and the abilities of different people, it's amazing that socialization and or learning from them as you go along. I think that's a key thing for sure.
Now, Marilyn, who you've met but don't know, has worked for Rutgers Medical Center, which is now Rutgers Medical Center. Again, it was when she first was there 33 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she just retired. And she's looking for something to do. And I'm saying, well, I'm talking to the queen of volunteerism this afternoon. She said, don't mention my name. I'm not ready yet. You know, she's been like 2 months. She's still enjoying nothing to do.
Right.
But she's getting to the point where I'm saying to her, you don't really need the money. Although if you're going to work, it wouldn't be bad to get at least your expenses covered. Right. But you do need something to do because you can't watch television 6-8 hours a day. It's fun up front, but it's going to grow on you.
Right. So well, you could golf. No.
Yeah. I think we're going to get together eventually because Linda, you mentioned Linda Friedman. That's the Linda Friedman that ran the shared space up
yes.
in Clinton? Okay,
uh-huh.
I lost sight of her. Is she okay?
I haven't talked to her in a while, but you know, she's usually pretty busy here and over in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I just haven't seen her in 6 months or so. And Kate Roa, who does my social marketing, said the same thing. What happened to Linda Friedman?
Uh-huh.
So, Linda, if you're out there, call. I want to hear how you're doing. I know she lives in Pennsylvania.
Right.
But then Linda Bryant said,
mm-hmm.
because Susan, was saying at Hunter and Helpline, I'll help let her help on a helpline. We go out and visit 60 people a week.
Mm-hmm.
And but at first she was saying, Linda Bryant was saying, well, I'll introduce you to a healthcare facility for seniors and she can go there and volunteer or even work if that's what she wants to do. And Susan Lax was saying, well, we got people right. You know, there's people contending for these.
I think the big thing is when you're having one of those life changes, so to speak, especially if you've been in employment where you've been putting in a lot of time, a lot of hours, going from that to nothing is sometimes you need it just to kind of reset yourself.
Yep.
But I think that when you're looking, it goes back to, so what do you want to do? Do you want to use the skill set you have? If you always worked in the medical field, do you want to continue in the health field? Or, you know, you use the example of Linda Bryant, who spent many years working with seniors. So do you want to continue to work with seniors? Or do you want to break from that and do something totally different?
Right.
Go work with kids. You know, so I think that sometimes you want to see what is it that jazzes you, you know, do you want to do something that's going to be more mentally taxing, physically taxing, working with special populations? And I think it's okay to explore it first before you say, I'm committing to something.
Right.
Sometimes you have to test it out. And if you have one bad volunteer experience, that's okay. That means that wasn't the right fit. Try something else. It doesn't mean you're bad at volunteering.
Right. Right. It's the old story about a cat sits on a hot stovetop. It'll never sit on a stovetop again, hot, cold, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
People are a little more intelligent than that. And I know where Marilyn's coming from. We're going to spend a month down between the Keys and some other vacation things later. She said, when I get to the first of the year, I'm going to try something. And she has a medical background from, she was an admin for both a clinical psychologist and then she, for the last 10 or 12 years, set the first year medical students as they came into Rutgers Medical School. So she has a lot, I think, that she can give to somebody, but she doesn't want to have to be someplace every day. I don't want to be counted on, she's saying. I want to volunteer or work where I can put in 5 or 10 hours a week mm-hmm. and maybe just pitch hit as somebody's out, but I don't want to have to
be a substitute volunteer.
So there you go. Associate assistant substitute volunteer.
There you go. So it's whatever works. It's whatever works for sure.
Well, it's a big change for her, and I think it's a big change for everybody. But I know even when Linda Friedman was on last, we were talking about working when you're past 70, because she and I are both in our 70s. And it was an interesting conversation because we're both working full time,
mm-hmm.
and we're both really the same age. So I won't tell you how old I am because she's the same age, and I don't want to embarrass her because she don't tell anybody. But the you know, to be 70 or in your early 70s or even mid 70s anymore is like what it used to be to be early 60s. If mm-hmm. your health, and it depends on your genes and your habits and whatever, but if you're healthy, you probably got another 10 or 15 years where you could either work or consult or at least volunteer
mm-hmm.
and help people out. And it's a much different point in life than when it used to be. You got to 65 and you had about 13 years and it was over. Mm-hmm. It's not that way anymore. It is right. for some people, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but it's not that way for most.
Mm-hmm.
So we got together today because of something you said that really struck a note with me, because when mm-hmm. we did our white paper for Leadership Hunterdon was on workforce housing. To me, because I worked with Jeff Otto on it a little bit, it's a step above COA. It's not housing that is supplemented. It's free market housing where the people in the workforce can afford to live where they work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at an ELC session about 5 or 6 months ago, you asked about workforce housing. And I'm saying, I found somebody that's asking the same questions I'm asking. What made you ask that question that day?
So we work, you mentioned, you know, kind of that line of people who are in poverty.
Right.
And my experience working with United Way all these years is there's another group of folks that are not in poverty. And whether it's in Hunterdon County or, to your point, Somerset County or all of northern New Jersey, when you look at the data, there's a lot of people that earn more than poverty.
Right.
So they're not eligible for government assistance,
right.
but they're not earning what we call a living wage.
Right.
When you look at the budget in terms of what it costs to live in Hunterdon County, what is the income you need to bring in, whether you're single, a family with children, and the budget items that probably stress most people the most is housing, childcare, and health care.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you have no children, that frees up some money. If you've got good health and you've got health insurance, you're doing okay. But there are still a lot of folks that are paying well above what is considered what you should be spending in housing, whether it's mortgage or renting. A lot of folks are paying way more than 30%.
That's interesting.
So the question becomes, the more you put into housing, the less disposable income
right.
you have. I'm a firm believer, and folks who know me, I'm all for economic development, because the more opportunities that we have in our community, we all rise in
right.
those situations. So looking for those opportunities, and as you start hearing, whether it's through the chamber or working with Mark Salek, you know, you're hearing some ideas of how we can strengthen the fabric of our community and perhaps start turning around those areas. But when I look at the workforce, and having campaigned in Hunterdon County for over 20 years, I've been into a lot of companies where half of the employees there live somewhere else, out of
right.
county. When you talked about bedroom, I mean, it goes both ways. People
yeah.
live here are working east.
Right.
People who work here live west. Everything just kind of, or, you know, not hard and fast rule, but
that's
yeah.
That's interesting because we hit on, I'm on the Tourism Committee for Somerset County. I'm also on the one for Hunterdon County. We've only met once in 2 years, so they're a little ahead of us, as they are. They have 3 times the people
mm-hmm.
and money. And they were talking about getting to the $15, and all the people sitting around the hotel table were hotel
mm-hmm.
people or restaurant people. One parks person was an interesting comment. And the conclusion that the person who presented, who was from Pennsylvania, was that we can get up to $11 an hour comfortably because we're pretty affluent and we can afford that. But when you get past $11 an hour, it's going to take its effect a little bit on the cost of living. But secondly, we're going to run out of people because we don't have people. So I raised my hand and I said, wait a minute. We all go to the east to work. It's called traffic. And then we all come back. Most of the people in Hunterdon County come from Pennsylvania. Most of the people in Somerset County come a little bit from Pennsylvania. But then we all go further and further east because we make more and more money. And we run home with it and cause traffic. And that's the way life works. So are you talking about running out of $11 an hour people that live in Somerset County or are coming from Hunterdon and PA? And she didn't have a good answer for it, except that the people in PA are still earning $7.25 an hour minimum wage. So that's why they come to Hunterdon or Somerset County to work. She says that won't stop because we're at $9.63, I think, and probably going higher with this new governor. But Hunterdon County has typically been a $20 an hour economy. So if you want to earn $40,000, you can be a store manager, you can be an electrician. Not there's anything wrong with these, but you're sort of capped unless you want to go further to the east. And that happens whether you're a real estate agent or if you're a photographer like Bill Brokaw is, or if it's Tom, it is Bill. I always get Bill and Tom mixed up. There's more money over there, but we like the work here because who the heck wants the commute?
Right.
But we have to. So I went through this philosophy and said, where can a $20 an hour person earning $40,000 a year live in Hunterdon County without going into affordable housing, which is supplemented housing? And the answer was, there really isn't a lot. You can get a $1,350 one-bedroom apartment if you can find it. Or two people could get a $1,600 to an $1,800 two-bedroom, which go immediately because it's $900 at each instead of $1,300 for one. But we don't have enough because we haven't built any.
Correct.
So what's the impulse or the impetus of what I was saying in my paper part was that we should be looking to build two-bedroom rentals and take advantage of the people who want to live here. But it hasn't gotten done. I mean, I live in Beaverbrook, and most of Beaverbrook, there's an older section and a newer section. The whole newer section went up between 2000 and 2005. They were all 175 to 300s. Today, they're probably 250 to 400s. But it was affordable housing. It was free market affordable housing.
Right.
I can't find another free market affordable housing in Hunterdon County. So what happens is if somebody comes here to work, like, and I go for this with Mark right across the hall, they're not going to stay here because the community is going to eat them alive. And they might as well earn, and you probably can earn a little bit more in an eastern county, but it's a never-ending circle. You need a house.
It's the choices that you end up having to make.
Yes.
It's the choices. So the choice is, do you commute and spend less time at home?
Right.
Or do you look at your budget and try to live within that budget and can you make it work? Or can we, this is my kind of ask for folks, is can we have an open dialogue about, because you said affordable housing and automatically say it, and that's subsidized housing. Well, I don't see affordable housing that way.
Okay.
There are some COA obligations. Let's call COA.
Yep.
That is separate, just like HUD is another group of housing that we have that serves a certain group of people. What I'd like to have that conversation about is, what is it that we want our community to look like in terms of who lives in Hunterdon, and then how do we house them?
Right.
So don't put that, putting the affordable label has had a history of being very negative in Hunterdon.
Yes.
But when we look at the trends and, you know, those folks who read the SEDS report, you know, that was a few years ago that the SEDS report came out. If we don't keep it top of mind when we're talking about economic development, housing is going to get in the way. I have a child. He's not a child anymore. But those of us who have children that we raised here in Hunterdon County, what percentage of them come back and why? How many of them don't come back because of the lack of affordability? Our seniors, I'm sorry. When people say, so where are you going to retire to?
Right.
I want to retire here.
Exactly.
What's it going to take for me to retire here? And if I can no longer afford to take care of my house with the property and all of that, where do I, to your point, downsize to that I can stay here and continue to give back to a community that I've been giving back to for years? That's a different conversation. And how do we build for that? It's looking at our housing stock and seeing where is there opportunity? Young folks want walkable communities. Can we build the type of housing they're looking for here? Not everything needs to be a luxury apartment or a luxury townhouse.
Right.
Let's have a mix. Some folks want that and can afford that.
Yep.
But I want my teachers. I grew up where your teacher knew as much about you as your parents did.
Yep.
And when your teachers don't live in the community where they teach, we as citizens are losing something in that. I look at healthcare workers and childcare workers taking care of the most vulnerable people in our community, why are we busing them in, or why are they... How do we integrate them in our community? And there's a lot of worthwhile vocations that people have that contribute to the fabric of Hunterdon. How do we house them?
Right.
That's the dialogue I like.
I interviewed the superintendent of Hunterdon North, and I'm trying to think what his name was. It was 2 years ago, and I think he's...
Shadow? Charles Shadow?
No, it was before him, I guess.
After him.
Maybe after him. But he told a story of most of his teachers came from the Eastern area.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so child care is very expensive, a little less expensive in Pennsylvania than here, but I know when my teacher is going to have her second child, I'm going to lose that teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because the equivalent is, even if it's only $18,000 a year, and it's much higher than that,
mm-hmm.
by the time you spend $36,000 a year, you got to earn $50,000 to earn it, you also stay home and be with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the decisions get made. So what he was looking at with the drop in population, which is a whole other subject matter, at school level, he was seeing 22 to 24% drop over the next 5 years, is that I can't keep the teachers here. And we have the same problem no matter what it is, whether they're coming from the east or coming from the west. It's a hard to get around county without your own car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an expensive county tax-wise to live in. And we're not building anything. And let's just go through what HUD, COA, and affordable means. HUD means that's sort of welfare. It's a supplemented housing.
It's a supplemented, but it's amazing how few HUD units actually exist in Hunterdon, and most of them go to either seniors or people with disabilities.
Because some are senior or disabled, if I remember, it was a little over 500 when I was doing this study 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then COA is, it may be brand new, but it's income restricted. So you can't, as a single, earn more than 35, or as a couple, earn more than 50. And we have a lot of income, and they're mostly rental, if not all rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And then affordable is what we're saying is it's free market. You can just go out and rent it or
mm-hmm.
buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I sat here and we looked up rentals in Hunterdon County earlier this year while I was on the radio. I had my computer open, and there were 15 rentals under $1,500
in
the whole county. So when people say, I'm going to go rent, there's nothing to rent.
And is it affordable given their income bracket?
Probably not, because that proportion, and we still use that 30% even on rentals. We use it on mortgages as well. If you are above that, we're going to flag you as this is a red flag. The person probably can't afford this because they're spending their discretionary money on rent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have that same problem going to the east. We have our millennials wanting to live closer to New York. And they're spending sometimes in the 40 to 50% on rents to live over there, because
mm-hmm.
the rentals merely double as you get close to New York. And not only is it more expensive to rent, the cleaners are more, the groceries are more. You're in a more of an inner city metropolis kind of area where you don't have the pricing you have out here. It's more expensive to live, and as a result, you're not saving any money, and you're never going to own a home.
Right.
So that's sort of a decision that gets made when people want to go in that direction. But I find that if people stay here in Hunterdon County and try to work here in Hunterdon County, they still have a very tough time unless they're living with somebody or have a place over a garage. Mm-hmm. They're not finding the lifestyle that they think they would like to have, even though it may be less than the lifestyle of the average person.
Right.
It's difficult to live here and work here.
It is. It is. So, again, what are the kind of choices we're making? And is there anything that we're willing to do to try and change that picture? I'm a firm believer that we don't have to build in every municipality.
Right.
But where it makes sense, where there is employment, where there is transportation for folks to get to and from housing to where they're going or the train station, or those seem like areas that we ought to be considering. It should be smart. Right. It should be smart. But again, and looking at the trends, again, you look at the number of increased jobs that are coming to ExxonMobil.
Yep.
You look at what is going to come down the pipeline at Unicom. You mentioned some of these places earlier. Where are these folks going to live? Are we going to continue to clog up Route 22 and 78?
It's funny, I heard it because we're starting to move people into ExxonMobil. And I won't tell you where the comment came from, but the comment was, you know, these people are only making $80,000 to $100,000. It's tough to live here if you only make, as a single wage earner in a family of four, $80,000 to $100,000. That means you probably can afford a $350,000 to $420,000 house.
And how many of them are in Hunterdon?
Not many, not ones you want to live in. So you get, and I had John Maddox, who I'm sure you know, here about three months mm-hmm. ago, and we talked about it in Somerset.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, his significant other runs the program over there for leadership. And I said, John, I'm renting it for $1,800 in a 100-year-old building above a dentist office, a two-bedroom, 12-foot ceiling, paint is peeling apartment. That's the best you can do in downtown Somerville. You don't even have a place to park with it. I said, so what happens when somebody wants to live? Same problem, but now we're in Somerset County, not Hunterdon County.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Joe, we have 225,000 100-by-100 lot properties in Somerville that are two or three bedrooms that people could live in. He says, the biggest problem we have is that's not where they want to live. Their lifestyle is a notch higher, even though their wallet isn't there yet.
Right.
And I think to a good extent he's right, and I think, and I told him, to a good extent he's wrong, because you don't have that many of those. If everybody wanted one, you don't have enough.
Right.
But his point is well taken, and we're seeing it as an amazing statistic I read this week. We're seeing that the millennials want to live closer to New York. Now, a millennial, after 4 years of college, Jeff Otto, who's the real estate specialist I listen to, said, three-quarters of all four-year colleges are colleges that we have no need for that education in anymore. So they're going and getting an education in psychology, or I'm not making fun of any, but that's why we have 6.8 million jobs and 6 million people unemployed, and we can't fill them because they're educated in the wrong area and somewhat geographically in the wrong area. He said, we need robotics in factories. People don't want to go to college in robotics and factories.
Mm-hmm.
Yet Mike McDonough says, if you come and get a 2-year degree at RVCC and another 20 hours in welding, I could put you to work for $90,000. That's more than a 4-year degree is going to make in New York City to start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have this concept that mom and dad want the kids to go and get the education of what they got their education, at least in the schools they went, and they're pretty much unemployable when they come out.
Right.
And we have jobs that are unfilled in the areas. That's what this workforce center has taken such a great position and where we can pay people really good livings, and if it's still too expensive in Somerset, hey, come on over to Hunterdon County, you can afford to live here.
I think there's that. I think that the education system is out of sync with workforce. It's probably, you know, again, when you look at all the systems that impact that economic development, education is one of them, housing is another one, childcare is another. So all of those systems do play into that. I will say, though, that one of the trends that I've also looked at and seen is that once some of those millennials start having families, then they start looking west again.
That happens. So they
start out east, but then there's something
between the first and second child, not so much the ones that are left, but they're coming this way. They're looking for quality of life. That's why Marilyn and I came here 20 years ago. We like the horses, the cows, and the butterflies, and that's where we're at. What I am seeing, though, and this is the amazing statistic, it says not just New Jersey, but all of the states surrounding New Jersey have had a millennial exodus over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the millennial exodus is an excess of the jobs that we have opened for millennials. And as a result, we would be in really dire straits if we didn't have immigration, because they're being filled by immigrants, not by our college educated. That's amazing. Yet everybody said, why are we bringing people into the country? Well, if we didn't have those people, we couldn't fill some of these jobs.
Right.
And they're coming in. I see a lot of it comes in through the technologies into Merck when it was there, for example, and fill the jobs and then stay here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Mark is trying to do with this tech leadership. What is it called? Tech Hack 100. That was an amazing program he had last year. Marilyn and I looked at each other after listening to this 10-year-old kid doing this thing about finding his father in Hawaii after the earthquake.
Right.
And said, that kid gets it. There's hope.
Right.
We can bring the technology. We can bring the people. But if the people want different than what we have and can't afford to live here, will they stay here? And I think that I'm half Polish and I'm doing this Polish bridge builder routine. That's the gap we've got, because we have 6.8 million jobs and 6 million people nationwide. Cut it down to us and maybe we have 680,000 and 600,000 people. But there is a mismatch.
There is. There is, and I think that, you know, we need to be creative. You know, we still haven't tapped into all of the vacant commercial property in Hunterdon County. Like, is it really ever going to get developed, or do we repurpose it? Like, you see some great examples across the nation of how some of the, commercial areas have been repurposed to being housing units. So you can keep the look and feel that we've got, but you have to have somebody who's willing to invest in it, and it has to be built for who we're trying to attract. So I think, is it keeping the folks that we have here? Is it attracting new millennials to come in? Is it keeping our own children here? Can we offer them what they're looking for? I think we all grow up with there's nothing to do in Hunterdon.
Yeah.
Well, what does that really mean? Yeah. Like, what is really lacking to make that a viable choice?
So it's sort of a build it and it will come, and we're not building it. It's like, I forgot the movie was, but it was a Kevin...
Yes.
We're not building it. We have 40% industrial vacancy, although John Higgins is telling me along 22 and 78, we're at full capacity again, so we're starting to... But that should bring some people in. So part of what people haven't seen with the new Jobs Act is that there are tremendous incentives for small business. And I know, because I'm heavily involved in Somerset County and I'm seeing it, but it will overflow to Hunterdon County. So we will get some of the business back. But that I want to live in this kind of a house, but all we have is that kind of a house still exists. And that's what I think John Maddox was saying. It was the level of expectation of lifestyle. And when people go to Jersey City or Bayonne to live and pay 40% of their gross for rental, and then they're eating $8 coffees and $14 desserts, they're never going to have the money to buy a house.
Right.
And they're not. So we turn a little bit more into a rental society.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure that isn't where we wind up over time. We've dropped from 73% to 65%, but that was a natural drop because the people that had houses and shouldn't have had houses lost their houses. Now they're renting again. So But we are building free of the high rises going on in Somerset, Somerville, are rental only, but they're luxury high rises.
Right.
We're going to put some up here. There's something going on in behind the hot dog stand there behind Jack Cust's place that I think is his building, as a matter of fact. And there's a couple going on across from the gas station in Costco that are in Raritan Township that were going to originally be industrial and now they're going to be high-rise luxury.
So my thing, though, is how much of it needs to be luxury and how much of it needs to be one step down.
Yep.
You know, again, more workforce-oriented for not everybody who's going to be in the, you know, six-figure.
Right.
And have a balance.
We got 5 minutes left. And I want to let you talk for four of the last five. One of the things that is working is that when you build, like we built right next to in Clinton, the new, there might be 80 units in there, 15% of it had to be COA. So that that law helps balance it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But COA is not what we're talking about. We're talking about entry-level workforce housing.
Mm-hmm.
And if all the rest are still luxury, they're still luxury and they're above the... But Marilyn and I went into a place in New Brunswick. And we went in because our financial advisor says, you got to look at this building.
Mm-hmm.
This building had 800 to 1,200 square foot. They were aged anywhere from 2,400 to 3,600. And they're all brand new. Round-the-clock thing in the lobby for a gym with professional trainer. You went in to get your mail, had the leaderboard. Next train to New York is. Next train coming is. Uber's 2 minutes away. That's what most people are seeing.
Right.
And that's expensive. Now, if you could live in a $1,400 two-bedroom flat and drive a car to the transportation, that's what I think we could eventually offer. But we're not getting there.
We're between and betwixt.
Yeah.
Don't disagree. I think, again, I go back to take that step further and say, what do you want the community to look like? Like, who do you want living here?
Right.
And I have heard time, you know, I choose to work in the nonprofit sector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, certain businesses, certain fields earn more pay than others. But, you know, when I look and I'll go back to the healthcare workers and the childcare workers, those folks often, that's what they love to do. They want to serve. They want to take care of people, whether it's little skeeters or, you know, folks with, you know, health issues or senior people.
Right.
Really great work. That's what they want to do. So are we going to penalize them because they happen to work in an industry that doesn't pay six figures?
Right.
Are we going to penalize and not have a place for them to live? To me, that housing is a basic need.
Right.
And so I go back to what is the right mix. So when we talk about those developments, now they're incorporating COA into a development so that it doesn't come across looking like the projects, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody's afraid of is the projects, whatever that means. I've never seen a project in Hunterdon County. So the question is, how do we have that mixed use or mixed level so that we have all of those folks living together? You know, not everything can be luxury because we're not all on the top percentage.
So you and I are sitting here talking about it and are totally convinced that this has to be. Is anybody else of the 125,000 people that live with us working on this?
So it's really interesting. Not too long ago, there was a core group of nonprofit execs that got together, including the division head of social services, Fisherman's Mark, Hunterdon Helpline, myself, Family Promise, and who am I leaving out? But we looked at trying to develop a 10-year plan to end homelessness. You started out your conversation talking about, you know, our numbers of homeless are small. But when we look at how we provide services for homelessness, that is like at the bottom of one end of housing. And the thing is, if there's nowhere for them to go from there, we're going to have this endless cycle.
Right.
We will always need you know, certain types of housing, and maybe we could get some folks out of some of the other housing if they had another choice.
Right.
They are, a lot of it is people stay where they are because there is no choice to go.
Right.
You know, so
they feel
part
lucky
of
to have that.
If all you have is real low or real high, there's no middle.
Wow.
It's like no middle class, no middle housing.
I think one of the projects you did with us on 100 in Leadership, and we did it again in Somerset with the little bingo card with the 15 chips, and it just shows what people are going through on a daily basis.
Right.
And the woman who ran it in Somerset said, and you may have said it as well, is that these are the people that you meet every day that are pumping your gas, that are ringing your groceries, they're
right.
getting 2 to 3 hours worth of work a day when it's prime time and they're not getting any benefits and they haven't got the money to do
right.
all the things that you and I need to do, and you and I are having a tough time with
right.
it because we're doing things we shouldn't be doing with our money. But they have no money.
Right.
It's either I'm going to have internet or I'm going to have groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Or what really gets down to it is I'm going to have groceries or I'm going to have medical.
Right.
And those are hard decisions, but
yes,
it's an easy decision because they're not choosing medical. And then we have the insurance problems that we have
right.
today.
So then that creates a different cost to our community.
We pay it
through hospitalizations, for
yep.
sure.
Yep. We're at the end of our time. It's 4:58, 4:59. I appreciate you coming
Thank
on.
Thank you.
And you know, I'm totally convinced we should do this again in about 60 days and just pick up here and go deeper because it's a fascinating subject matter. And once again, I'm trying to make a difference without getting into politics. I think you
mm-hmm.
are making a difference without getting into politics. And maybe we can invite somebody else like Mark to come on with us too and talk this out because it's a fascinating problem. We're living in heaven, and we don't have any place for the people who want to move in with us, to work with us, to serve
right.
our seniors
right.
in a lot of instances, or to fill. I don't know, we're getting people for these new restaurants
uh-huh.
to live because we're not paying them enough that they can live what we have.
For sure.
Very good. Bonnie
thank
Duncan,
you.
Thank you for coming on. This is Joe Peters, and our next show will be on in about a minute. Thank you.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News.
President Trump is heading to Council Bluffs, Iowa for one of his Make America Great Again rallies. Before leaving Washington, the president discussed one of the names that we've been hearing who might replace Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley. That name is Dina.